The Trust for Sustainable Living presents Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today we'll be talking to Carl Hansen as part of our mini-series on climate action in response to the UN Climate Change Conference. Today's episode is hosted by Sunny Tierney.
So, welcome to Speaking of Sustainability. Today we are talking to Carl Hansen, who is the director of the Living Rainforest and Trust for Sustainable Living, who creates this podcast. So, Carl, can you tell us about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And Sunny, thanks for the invite. So I have been with the Living Rainforest and the charity, the Trust for Sustainable Living, for a long time, actually, since about 2000. And before that, I worked on international sustainability for a think tank called the International Institute for Sustainable Development in Canada. And I was an environmental journalist traveling to rainforests around the world before that. So yeah, it's this whole topic is something that's been very close to my heart forever. And I think it was influenced by growing up in St. Lucia and Costa Rica. So it's been interesting to see how the sustainability topic has become much more of mainstream interest. So it's a wonderful thing, really.
Definitely. That actually ties into my next question, which was, how did you get started working with the Trust and the Rainforest? And on a broader spectrum, what got you into sustainability and the environment?
Yes. So I suppose it was, it must, hard to tell. Some of it might just be my background. My parents are from Estonia, and Estonians are, you know, nature lovers in general, you know, if you're going to apply a very broad brush. But then growing up in Canada till I was eight, and St. Lucia and Costa Rica, trying to come to terms with, you know, with different cultures and different ecosystems, and seeing human impacts on those, you know, high deforestation rates. And people often have a very rosy picture about supposed paradises, you know, in the Caribbean and other places. But unfortunately, the reality is often a bit different. You have you have populations living on small patches of land, and trying to share that with flora and fauna. And we all know who generally wins those battles. It's people, right? So, I guess I became environmentally concerned by just seeing what was happening in those two developing countries. And I couldn't let that go. So when I went to Toronto for university, I was always trying to understand the links between, quote unquote, development and economics and geography and nature. So I've always been trying to reconcile those two things. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
Very cool. I mean, it's interesting just how many places you've been. And so you've really seen a really broad spectrum of like different issues in different countries.
So going to university in Toronto in the 80s, that was a very bling time, right? In the 80s, a lot of people equated success with monetary success, and a lot of environmental stuff got fairly short shrift. So that, because I had the background in Costa Rica and St. Lucia, I knew things were going on in rainforests. And so when I finished, when I had been writing for the campus newspaper in Toronto, and when I finished my degree, I I decided to travel to 16 different rainforest countries and interview 300 scientists and policymakers and whatever about what was going on with those rainforests. And I was looking, at the time I was particularly interested in how profit motivation might have a role in helping to conserve rather than destroy rainforests.
Wow. that's a lot of countries to go to, like straight out of uni. That's
I was in Canada. They the government gave little sort of child support checks, you know, to my mother, and she saved them. So I had this little pot of money, you know, that I could go and travel with. But it was, I was skinny thing, you know, even before I went on the journey, but I lost 20 pounds, you know, off of an already skinny frame. It was very stressful, you know, like landing in a country and then in a few days trying to line up all the interviews and just try to figure out how the buses worked and all of that. And sometimes I'd find myself with, you know, with like almost no money at all in my pocket. So I would just have to sort of scrounge my way through. So it was pretty stressful, you know. And when I got back to Toronto, I kind of had a bit of a nervous breakdown, actually, while my body kind of readjusted, you know, and absorbed all of those conversations that I had.
Yeah, I mean, that would have taken a massive toll, I can imagine. But I'm guessing that just having those experiences was so worthwhile overall.
In a way, I guess I've just been trying to absorb all those conversations, you know, ever since. So I worked for a few years after that as an environmental journalist in, you know, in Toronto. And and I was really lucky to get a scholarship then to Oxford University and pursue studies in forestry and anthropology and agricultural economics, just to try to understand better what these different experts were telling me.
Mm. So can you tell us about what or who started the Trust for Sustainable Living and the Living Rainforest?
The Living Rainforest Visitor Center opened in 1993, and that was a combination of it was Toby Bromley of Russell and Bromley Shoes, and then a horticulturalist called Barry Findon, who unfortunately I don't think is with us any longer. So they had this idea to create a rainforest visitor center. The site had been an orchid nursery called Wild Court Orchids for many decades. But they turned it into a rainforest visitor center, opened in 1993. I think it had a bit of a rocky start because in 1996, Mr. Bromley gave it to another charity called the World Land Trust that does great work all around the world. The trust, I don't think, knew anything about running a visitor center. So it was just losing money, you know, and I came on board in 1999, I think, and I think the trust was losing faith, you know, that they could make any money. So I, with a subset of the directors at the time, we decided to create our own charity, and that was initially, it was called the Living Rainforest, but then over time, we renamed the charity to the Trust for Sustainable Living, with the Living Rainforest as just one part of what we do.
Very interesting. I mean, it's insane how long it's been going, really. And so you have been working there for like over 20 years now.
Yes, I know. It's crazy. It's, to be honest, it coincided with having kids. So I have four kids, and once I had kids, you know, I wasn't as able to travel as much as I had been. So and I didn't want to be moving all the time. So yeah, I've been here and sort of been dedicating my life to, you know, to what we do at the charity.
It's a good thing to dedicate yourself to.
Oh, thanks. Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm very proud of, you know, of all the staff, and the Living Rainforest is well loved. And, you know, we have now approaching 100,000 visitors a year. Yeah. And I mean, I should say, Sunny, that it's been a great privilege to have you working with us as well, you know, for these past 6+ months. You know, as part of the government funded scheme. So, you know, thank you and congratulations on the podcast that you've created.
Thank you for letting me work here. I mean, it's been probably my best job that I've ever had, really. As somebody who literally grew up going to the Living Rainforest as a kid, as a teenager, and then as an adult, I've seen it go through a lot of different stages, and it's always been this just wonderful little oasis which you can just get away to and just experience a different atmosphere and a different little world, you know, in Berkshire of all places.
Yes. And around the corner, it is a bit of an anomaly, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting to hear that you've had that experience as, I guess, as a child, you know, and then as a student, it would probably come across emotionally kind of larger than life, perhaps. Yep. You know, because you're and I think you being a creative person as well, you know, you are probably more sensitive to what you're seeing in the glass houses, all the 850 species of plants and animals. So yeah, if it had any little impact on your development, well, you know, that would be very good to know, you know.
It definitely did. I mean, I think it's like partly what got me so interested in animals, because I've always really loved animals, and just like monkeys in particular is like one of my favorite animals. Mm-hmm. So when I first went to the rainforest as a kid, I always really loved seeing the animals that they had there, which was obviously like the Geldese monkeys and the pygmy marmosets. Just yeah. There, and they're still amazing. Every time I get now, I still go and spend at least 10 minutes just watching them.
Yeah, so you pretty much grew up with the Geldese monkeys, and we had the oldest Geldese monkeys in the UK, possibly, you know, amongst the oldest Geldese monkeys in the world in zoos. So yeah, you grew up with them, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. So talking more about the Living Rainforest, can you tell us about the main issues that the rainforest is facing, that the Living Rainforest is trying to raise awareness of to people who come visit?
Yes, gladly. Well, it's things like farming, you know, agriculture, but it's also sometimes logging, mining, you know, it's land use, basically. In some countries, you even had to clear the rainforest in order to be confirmed as an owner of the land, or that in some places that's a way of claiming your rights over the land. So it's all been very dysfunctional, and I think we're relearning now our relationship with rainforests and land use. And it's all come flooding out with COP26 and other UN negotiations to do with biodiversity, COP15. So now it's finally getting the sort of attention and recognition that it has needed for decades. You know, people have known about these problems, but I guess it just hasn't hit saturation point yet. It hasn't been a big enough, it hasn't registered loud enough on the voting spectrum and the political spectrum, but it seems like 2021 is the year that has changed, you know, with the high level political commitment. So, you know, promises are one thing, and now we just have to make sure that we keep our promises and relearn to use land in a better way that doesn't just end up destroying fragile ecosystems like rainforests.
Absolutely. Have you seen any examples of issues that we have in the rainforest sort of imitated in the living rainforest? Or is the living rainforest more of a good example of what the rainforest could be without issues like deforestation and mining and all of those issues?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. If I'm being honest, the living rainforest is, highly protected piece of rainforest, albeit under glass. Mm. It isn't subject to, people needing to grow their food on the same territory and needing to figure out how they're going to feed their families and what have you. So the living rainforest is more like a, if you want to create an analogy, it's more like a protected park, highly protected park. The real world and real rainforests are much messier, with competing interests and competing, politics and, different people wanting to grab a piece of the economic pie. And then, of course, that it isn't just the economic uses of rainforests and the ecological ecosystem services that rainforests provide, but it's also the cultural diversity of rainforests. So it's the people who live in them and the traditional people, indigenous peoples, not every culture in the world has a kind of a predatory stance on rainforests and fragile ecosystems. Some cultures have found ways of living in harmony with fragile ecosystems and not just viewing them as resources to be consumed and cashed in on. Mm. So the living rainforest, I guess, is, a concentrated, pretty version, with a concentrated number of, it's a make-believe sort of place with species from rainforests all around the world rather than any one particular rainforest. Mm-hmm. But the idea there is that at least it gives a flavor of a rainforest ecosystem with animals free ranging, in an environment of plants and water and what have you. So hopefully the living rainforest is just the start of a journey, because not everybody will go to a real tropical rainforest, but many people who have gone to real tropical rainforests tell us that the living rainforest smells and feels like a real rainforest. It feels like home, and that's a really high compliment.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, just going to the rainforest, the living rainforest, it's like an amazing sensory experience, just as much as everything else. Like visually looking at it is beautiful. Like the smells, the sounds, they all culminate together to create this really wonderful little like slice of rainforest.
Yes, and we're really, really lucky to have staff who are really passionate about creating that experience and nurturing it. I mean, you've met the staff, plant staff, animal staff, and everyone else, education staff, and they really dedicate their lives to making the living rainforest experience authentic in its own way.
Definitely. So I'd like to talk a bit more about the Trust for Sustainable Living. So the Trust does annual, sometimes like biannual or a couple of times a year, video and essay competitions that bring in a lot of school kids from all around the world, as well as teachers and some higher education students. Could you tell us about these competitions and just how important they are to those who participate?
Yes. So an organization like the Trust for Sustainable Living, you wouldn't be surprised to know, you know, has been hosting these school competitions for schools all around the world since 2011. Every year we've taken a big global sustainability challenge, you know, whether that's education systems or whether that is climate change or, you know, or sustainable cities. So every year there's a different mega theme. And what we do is we engage with kids aged 7 to 17 and teachers in schools all around the world. We've been super fortunate to have well over 80 countries now participating, you know, over the years. And the idea is to get kids' ideas about how to solve these very difficult global sustainability challenge that adults seem to struggle so terribly in achieving, you know. So we want kids' ideas, and we want to let kids know that their ideas count, you know, and that they're important. And we're bowled away every year by the caliber of the ideas and the interest. And yeah, a lot of schools participate every single year because they find it a very useful sort of thing to engage in. Yeah, so it starts out with an essay competition, and then it moves into a debate. Over the last 2 years, the debates have moved online, but they had been hosted by different governments around the world before that. So the British Columbia government in Canada hosted 1 year. The Seychelles government hosted another. There was another debate in Dubai, you know, et cetera. So, and in recent years, in addition to that, there's now also a big summit every year that goes into greater depth with experts from all around the world on whatever topic that we're exploring. So it's a really great way for kids to engage directly in the issues and learn from each other and from some of the world's best minds.
Definitely. I think from my perspective, just watching the kids get involved in these competitions and in the summit, it's just incredible to watch, I think, because they are so enthusiastic and they're so passionate and they really do their research, and they just are so passionate about trying to protect the world. And it's really beautiful to see. I mean, I think it restores your faith in humanity a little bit, just watching them do it, because, you know, they are the future of our planet. And it's kind of sad to think that, you know, we're getting the most passionate people about these topics are the kids. You know, we see that with like Greta Thunberg and a lot of other youth activists as well. But it's also just amazing to see that passion and that fire in younger people, and know that can only grow and get stronger.
I couldn't agree more, Sunny. I think we're humbled every year by the caliber. You know, when I listen to the secondary schools debate, I usually feel like I'm watching a very high level university debate.
Yeah.
And when I'm watching the primary kids debate, I feel like I'm watching secondary school kids debating. You know, it is the very top essay writers from around, you know, from each country who are invited to represent their countries at the debate. So I guess in that way, it's not surprising that the caliber is high.
So
our job is really just to let them know that their views matter and that they count. And hopefully by us giving them a forum, you know, to sort of air their views and to exchange ideas with other children and other adults, hopefully it helps to plant the seed so that they can they can keep working on these issues going into the future.
Definitely. I'm personally just really excited to see how they change the world as time goes on, when they are old enough to be in these positions of power and, you know, able to actually influence decisions on the environment. I'm excited to see what they're going to do.
Oh yeah, me too. me too. Yeah. And I mean, at the risk of embarrassing you, I would also say with Kickstarters, you know, the scheme that you've been in, you know, I hope that being able to work in communications with the trust for the last half a year has kind of maybe given you a few more, resources or skills or confidence or whatever it is, you know, that help you on your journey as well.
Definitely. I think I've gotten so much from this job, because not only have I learned so much about the environment and just the world in general, seeing so many people from different backgrounds, and especially doing this podcast, getting to talk to so many different people from all over the world, from different environmental sectors. It's just been really like eye-opening and just amazing to witness and really informative. But as well as that, it's given me a chance to, you know, pursue my own passions at the same time and be creative and like, be innovative and try new things in a safe environment where I know, you know, these things, if they go badly, that's going to be okay. But they didn't go badly. I mean, so we did like the Stream for Stream, which was our fundraiser to raise money for building a stream in the living rainforest. And we reached 15,000 out of our 20,000 goal. And that was probably just one of the most amazing things that I've ever been a part of in my life so far. Just me and Jasmine were like the main people doing that fundraiser. And the fact that we managed to get to 15,000 at all was just really amazing, like really incredible to both of us, I think. And I think, I just think all of us on the Kickstarter scheme have just come away with it with so much new experience, so many new skills, and it's really an amazing position to be in.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. But I mean, really, it was just you guys coming up with some ideas, some initiatives, and us just letting you do it. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you even won an award for the podcast, you know, for the series, for the first series. So
I wouldn't go that far. It was only a blog post, but.
it's the example is, the point is that you took some initiative and look where it got you, right? So that's a lesson for all of us going forward, right? Just grab hold of something. Just get involved and it'll probably lead to a good place.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to ask you, this is our second to last question. What does the future hold for the trust and for the Living Rainforest?
Yes, so we have very ambitious plans to ramp up our education work. You know, the trust, ultimately we're an education charity and we focus on sustainability education. But that said, the word education is probably a little bit off-putting, you know, so I think we think more in terms of empowerment, helping to empower largely young people, but then to empower young people, it also helps to empower the people who can help empower young people. So that's teachers and parents and, you know, everyone who impacts on young people. So we have ambitious plans to keep ramping up our work globally, and with links, of course, to the Living Rainforest Center and our school visits programs. So I think more and more of the same, more engagement, more supporting individuals, whatever their age, on their own learning journeys, so that everyone can become an effective and informed agent for a sustainable future.
Definitely. Well, I personally can't wait to see what else you guys are going to do. And I can't wait to see how it all develops.
Oh, thanks. Well, stay in touch.
I will.
I think you already are, but stay a member of that Trust for Sustainable Living community platform. And hopefully that will just get better and better and give more and more resources for, you know, you and your journey and for others in their journeys.
Absolutely. I think once the community platform is really up and running and going and in a stage where it's, you know, like a fully sort of functioning community platform, it's going to be really innovative for the trust. And I think it's going to hopefully unite a lot of people who are passionate about the environment and sustainability. And I think it'll be a good place for them to communicate with each other and learn from each other as well.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly do our best. We'll try our hardest. Yes. Thanks.
Okay. This is the last question I'm going to ask. It's our season question. So obviously COP26 is over. We're recording this post COP26. But if there was anything that you could say to the world leaders, what would you want to say? What would you want to tell them or get across to them?
Okay, so given the fact that there have been all these wonderful promises made, you know, to the world about stopping deforestation by 2030 and keeping climate change to below, hopefully 1.5, you know, or that's certainly that's the trajectory where we're moving. I think in order to achieve any of these wonderful promises, I think there really does have to be nothing short of an education revolution. Because I don't think that our current education systems are good enough, quite frankly. You know, we have silos of learning, you know, with subjects that are, that are artificially isolated from other subjects. And yet we all know that what really matters is the sum of all of our actions. You know, who cares what the subject, specialist subject is? It's what really matters is all of our actions. So I think we need a kind of a joined up, coherent education that speaks to everything we do, you know, in our whole lives. And I think that our current education systems, I know that they are moving that way. And the UK government is actually currently has a draft policy document toward a whole rethinking of its education system. And I think in April, there's going to be a final announcement. But that's just the UK. That's one example. But all around the world, we have to improve our education systems. It isn't just for the students at uni to do that. It's for everyone. You know, it's literally every single member of the public has to be involved. So it's more actually about a culture change rather than just a degree and a title and a qualification. So that is the journey that world leaders need to think about, because if we are going to deliver on these promises, we need a whole rethink of education. And hopefully the trust can help in that journey, you know?
Mm, definitely. And I really do think that you will. I think education is definitely something that should be at the forefront. Because they, you know, we are trying to teach the kids we are trying to teach the kids of our planet about how we can protect it and how we can look after it. And, you know, if there aren't people getting told about that, then it just limits what they can do to help the world be a better place. And that's not just for kids. I mean, that's just for any education in general, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think a lot is going to happen, you know, in this decade. So it's quite an exciting time. It's quite overwhelming, the task ahead, but it's also really exciting and it's well overdue. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been really good. It's been great talking to you, and it's been a great job to have, a great position for me to be in, and I've loved doing this podcast, and I know Jasmine did as well when she was still here. So yeah, it's been an amazing experience working for the Trust and the Living Rainforest and all the people who work there as well, and I just want to say thank you to giving me this chance.
Oh, Sunny, thank you so much. And you know, it doesn't end here. You know, the internship ends, but, you know, the journey continues. So definitely. Stay in touch, please, you know.
I will. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thank you to today's guest, Carl Hansen. Hosted by Sunny Tierney. Organised by Sunny Tierney. Music by Billy Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org. Thank you for listening. Hi, Sunny here. If you're hearing this, it means you've gotten to the end of Speaking of Sustainability Season 2. Thank you so much for listening this far. We really hope that you have learned a lot and enjoyed these episodes that you've heard. I just wanted to say thank you to anybody who's listened and enjoyed these episodes, because it's been an amazing project to do. And I also just wanted to mention that if you would like to support the Living Rainforest or the Trust, you can help us by donating to our fundraiser, Stream for Stream. So our Stream for Stream fundraiser was a live stream that we did in June of this year, where we filmed in the Living Rainforest for over 2 days live. And we basically showcased just how incredible the Living Rainforest is and how important it is to be there. And the aim of our fundraiser was to raise money to build a stream. Now, building a stream in the Living Rainforest glasshouses would mean that we could improve the breeding rates of our frogs, of our other roaming animals. It would make the place a little bit more humid and really benefit all of the plants that we have in there. It creates a new sense of atmosphere, adding more elements to a soundscape that is already incredible. And it also will be a key feature of many of the tours that we currently do, talking about habitats and how streams can truly benefit those habitats as well. So it's really important that we try and raise the money for this, and we really want to make our glasshouses as amazing as they possibly can be and keep our plants and animals as happy as they can be as well. So if you would like to donate to this, you can go to bit.ly/stream4stream. That's stream, the number 4, and then stream again. So all together, bit.ly/stream4stream. Thank you so much if you've listened this far, and if you do donate, I am so thankful to whatever you can give, and hopefully we will manage to get this built in the future. Thanks again for listening. Goodbye.